Okay, good evening everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called How to Develop a Success Mindset. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Sunil Bali. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Sunil a whole range of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the site by you, our listeners. Now, Sunil and I have been friends for probably a couple of years now, and the actual inspiration for this call actually came about as a result of me reading Sunil's recently published book called Mindset and Match. And I guess the thing that really struck me when I was reading through Sunil's book was just his real interest and intrigue about exploring this whole notion of authentic success, and not the kind of success that we view or conditioned to buy into in the West, but a real deep expression of who we truly are and what it is that's most important to us in this world. Now, Sunil himself is actually no stranger to success. He's held directorships at both FTSE 100 companies and also NASDAQ-listed companies. He holds an MBA. He's a psychotherapist, a master practitioner of NLP, a qualified trainer of hypnosis, and also a licensed psychometric assessor, as well as I just mentioned, the author of the newly released book, Mindset and Match. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call our very special guest, Sunil Bali. How are you doing there, Sunil?
Yeah, great, Damon. Wow, what an introduction. yeah, I hope I live up to it. But no, it's great. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. And I'm really looking forward this evening to, you know, sharing some things which hopefully will add some value to people out there, you know, in terms of realizing what they want to achieve. We're at the turn of coming to the end of the year. So hopefully some of the things I will share, which come from my experiences, my learnings, both in my corporate life, you know, and outside my corporate life in my career as a speaker, author, and coach. So, yeah, looking forward to the next hour or so.
Excellent. Well, Sunil, I'm just going to start you actually at the top by asking you, what exactly is a success mindset?
Yeah, I mean, interesting, really. You know, I think we should start off with, you know, what is the definition of success? For me, success is the freedom to live the life that you want to. You know, and notice that there's no mention of money in that definition, because for me, success is not the key to happiness. It's the other way around. When you're happy and doing what you love, the money will flow to you. So you'll know when you're successful, when you're bursting with energy and you're alive and you're living each moment of your life. Now, I've been responsible in my corporate career for probably hiring and overseeing the management development of over 50,000 people. And let me tell you that the vast majority of those didn't probably know why they were coming to work, other than to pay the mortgage and the bills. And some of them earned some very, very good salaries. But if you actually put that definition and stress tested, you know, whether they were actually successful, most of them would fail. A lot of them were type A overachievers, but, you know, at the expense of health, relationships, you know, and just very, very unhappy.
So it's a more inclusive and comprehensive exploration of the notion of success rather than success in a purely material version of the word.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, you know, spirituality and materiality are not mutually exclusive. You know, I don't prescribe to the view that, you know, if someone's at the bottom of the well, then you go down to the bottom of the well. You know, you don't really help them. You know, I think the greatest thing that you can do is to fulfill your potential and fill yourself with energy. We love being around people that are optimistic and full of energy, and you then give people permission to achieve whatever they want to achieve as well. So, you know, I think one needs to be selfish. I mean, I often hear this argument, you know, but I can't what am I going to do? I can't pay the mortgage. I can't pay the bills. I've got to, you know, I've got to adopt a persona to please my peers, my bosses. You know, I've got to conform to the conventions of society. I'm sorry, but that's just an excuse, because you know, if you really do follow what you love to do genuinely and follow your purpose in line with your values, there's no option but for you to earn the sort of money that you're looking to earn. I'm not advocating quitting your job by any stretch of the imagination, you know, and it might be you stay with the same company and migrate into a different role. But you should start by doing what you love, even if it's just, you know, an hour a week or whatever. And as we spoke before, we've spoken many times, Dame, you know, things like synchronicity, you know, and chance and people and places and resources suddenly mysteriously have a happy habit of turning up when you want them to.
Mm. Absolutely. I love what you just said there, Sunil. Start by doing what you love. And quite often in our culture, we do the reverse. We think that we need to do something that we don't really enjoy that much to try and make some money in the hope that one day we'll get an opportunity to maybe retire and do the things that we love. So you're actually advocating the opposite.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I, as I said to you, I've dealt with, I've had, I better not mention his name because he's reasonably well known, a board director of the world's biggest phone company, you know, who we made redundant, and he came into my office, and he's absolutely delighted to be made redundant. He spent 22 years with the company, most of the time earning not far off £1 million a year, and said to me, "My God, I'm glad it's all over." And I said to him, "I can't believe you're saying that to me. You've earned so much." He said, "Well, now I've got the wife, I've got the horses and the school fees and the chalet in Switzerland and the country estate in Gloucestershire, et cetera, et cetera." You know, and all he's ever wanted to do, his big thing is DIY.
Right.
So, cutting a long story short, he now, as far as I know, runs a very successful property business, and he goes in and redevelops properties, and that's what he's always wanted to do.
Wow.
And he gets his hands dirty, does the electrics, does the plumbing, he's never been happier.
That's amazing.
You've got a very interesting
story as well in terms of moving or migrating your own life from working for some really prestigious companies and organisations into actually just trusting in your heart and actually following your passions. And I was just wondering if you could actually share the journey that you've made.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, I know. Looking at sort of the list of attendees, I want to see my Asian brethren on the call. So welcome to them as well as everyone. I know what I'm about to say will resonate with all of them. But being an Indian and being the son of first generation migrants, my parents, especially my mother, with the best will in the world, wanted a secure job for me. So the ultimate secure job if you're an Indian is being a doctor. You either become a doctor or you run the corner shop that Tesco have paid to that with their 7-Eleven stores. And for me, you know, become a doctor, there was never really any interest for me. And also, if I'm brutally honest, when I was doing A-levels, I was more interested in the fairer sex than the periodic table. So, I trudged off to university just about and did sports science and psychology. Came out of there, went on a trainee accountancy scheme because that was the next best thing as far as my mother was concerned. Did that for 18 months, flunked out. Then my employer was very good and said, "Why don't you try IT?" And that was the new dawning of a new era. So I went to become a systems analyst, a trainee systems analyst. But, you know, accountancy has been like watching paint dry, and structured systems design methodologies that had a hypnotic effect on me. So after 3 years, I flunked to that. I'd flunked 2 graduate schemes. I was unemployed. You know, and the job market had been the worst for many, many years. Then got a job selling ad space. After 2 months, hadn't sold a single ad, so left before I got sacked, and then just sort of fell into a job in recruitment, and there was no great plan at that stage. It was just to get a job. Yeah, and it was going quite well, and within 2 months, my father died, and I thought, well, excuse my French, but sod this. You know, I really, you know, need to just do something I enjoy doing. I mean, what else can go wrong, you know? And I just had a really good time, enjoyed myself, and within 3 years, of starting off in recruitment, I was head of talent and resourcing for Cable & Wireless. So So I'd finished an MBA that they'd sponsored me to do. I was managing to spend over $100 million. Then I did a management buyout. And so I've just gone from zero to hero, really, and gone from earning nothing to, you know, over $500,000 a year. And then one day, in my last role, which was as head of talent and resourcing for Abbey, after I'd been a similar role for Vodafone in Europe, I just walked away, absolutely walked away. And the reason I walked away, I was just completely miserable, absolutely miserable. Yes, I was earning a big salary, but absolutely miserable. And I'd done some work with the Abbey team around stress in the workplace, and it became clear that many of the directors at Abbey were suffering from stress. I mean, in fact, there were about three quarters of them. So I put in place an executive coaching program on the Wednesday. I'll never forget this week. It was a pivotal moment, a week in my life. And on Thursday, I had a call booked with one of the FDs at Abbey who was a very good sponsor, and he didn't return my call. And at the end of the day, he still returned my call. And I found out that he'd actually collapsed, had a heart attack and died. You know, and very, very stressful. We got on particularly well, and it was all doom and gloom. I remember coming home that day on the Thursday and spoke to my wife, and she turned around and said to me, "Well, that's going to be you if you're not careful." Then in my best Neanderthal voice, I retorted, "Well, I don't do stress, not me." And yet, you know, I wasn't sleeping very well. I was continually feeling tired. I'd put on weight, you know, like you, Damon, I like to keep in pretty good shape. I'd put on a lot of weight, and I thought, "Oh, you know, let's see what happens." And on Friday, I went to see England play Brazil at Wembley, the very first game at Wembley. With some friends, had a few beers, went to the match. But what should have been a great game, within 20 minutes, I was sitting there and I suddenly felt a sharp pain on my knee. And someone had fallen into my lap and then fallen from my lap into my feet. I sort of dragged him up and it was like pulling up a dead weight. And it became apparent very quickly that this guy was in a lot of trouble. He'd either had a brain hemorrhage or he'd had a cardiac arrest because his pupils were fixed and dilated. Got the medics in and they restarted his heart three times. Got a pulse. When they took him away, his heartbeat was monitoring 10. So whether he survived or not, I don't actually know, but I think the prognosis probably wasn't very good. But the remarkable thing was, you know, the guy that fell in my lap was a spitting image of my father. And his son, who was sitting 2 seats away from me, was a spitting image of me when I was probably about 18 years old. And I just felt a sudden chill and I thought to myself, there's 88,000 people in this stadium today. I've had one of my directors die on me, you know. I've had this chap, who's a spitting image of my dad, die on me. And I just broke out into a cold sweat and I don't mind admitting it, with tears streaming down my cheeks. And I left the stadium for a while, and I phoned my wife and said, "Life's too short, that's it." And I went in on the Monday morning and resigned.
Wow.
With no plan, no nothing, and just resigned. And it was the best thing I ever did.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That is an amazing
story. Intuition just tells you something. Something just ripped at my stomach. I mean, it's difficult to explain, but it's just such a powerful feeling. I know, Damon, we've spoken before about your scenario and you changing career from being a very, very successful accountant and financial analyst in the city, earning very, 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 very large sums of money, you know, but a similar experience to yourself in that, something just so powerful, just said, you know, I couldn't have had a bigger signal, you know, 1 in 88,000 and this guy falls on my lap. And funnily enough, as we left the stadium, I bumped into the medic who was the doctor who'd come to the scene. And I said to him, "This is going to sound a really strange question, but I need to know something. Do you know if anyone else felt seriously ill during the game?" And he said, "No, that chap was the only one." So I thought, someone somewhere is giving me a little hint that I probably need to pay heed to.
Wow!
So there we have it.
Amazing, you know, and how's the experience been since of actually just really tuning into your heart's desires and then actually going after them?
it's been fantastic. You know, I'm not going to kid people and say that it's been a completely smooth ride, because, you know, after earning a very, very good income, I have quite an expensive lifestyle, which, to be honest, I wasn't prepared to compromise. You know, so, you know, I've got kids in private schools, big house, big mortgage, all those sort of things, and I wasn't prepared to compromise them. But, you know, I'm lucky I've got a very supportive wife who said I should sort of follow my passion. It's time to put up or shut up. And that's what I've done. I think what I've noticed is that, you know, when I was successful in recruitment, it was because I was doing what I wanted to do the way I wanted to do it and didn't get involved in the corporate machine. But times have changed, and I was just getting too embroiled into playing out a persona rather than really expressing who I really am. So my focus when I left corporate life was just, you know, concentrate on the more I do who I am, the better I'll do. I mean, that is my philosophy, you know, and it's worked very well. Yes, it's been one step at a time, but it's worked well. You know, I have a successful speaking business. I do some coaching. My book's selling well. I've been commissioned to write articles. In fact, I was writing one today, as I mentioned earlier. And it's going from strength to strength. But, you know, the most important thing is I'm happy. You know, I'm doing what I love. I get out. Rather, you know, I don't get out of bed anymore for some distant corporate vision. I mean, I'd be interested to see how many of these listeners here do, you know, or more personally, perhaps ask to get out for some big corporate vision. I'd be interested how many people can remember what the corporate vision is if they're working for a corporate, you know. But I get out because I'm out of bed because I want to get out, and I can't wait to get out of bed because I do what I do, and I love it. And I do what I do because I want to, but, you know, because I have to. It's reached the stage I have to. You know, I feel guilty if I don't, because if I'm expressing who I really am, I'm helping other people to do the same. And I think you actually are being very selfish. It might sound perverse, but you're being selfish if you don't follow your heart's desire. And I think, you know, if you've got kids, to those of you listening who have got kids, I think it's a terrible thing if you send out a signal to your kids that it's okay to settle for second best. And the greatest legacy you can leave this planet, apart from yourself, are kids who are alive.
Absolutely. Now, Sunil, I mentioned your book in the introduction, and I think that the title of it is a phenomenal title, Mindset and Match. And I was just wondering if you could actually share how you came across the title or came up with the title, and also what actually inspired you to write the book as well.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's been estimated that there's a $15 billion business out there in health and well-being, the sort of wellness market, for want of a better expression. So, you know, you'd think that with that sort of expenditure, there would be a lot of successful people around, you know, but the facts are that there simply aren't. And I think what a lot of people do is what I call, instead of self-development, they do shelf development. So they buy some good books, you know, some excellent books, but then they just stick them on the shelf. You know, so the fault is partly, you know, is down to ourselves, really, because we need to take the action. And when I went out there and thought, well, what, you know, what's the seminal text, the volume that, you know, just captures the essence of East meets West, you know, spirituality meets materiality, and moreover, something that's practical. There's something that you can do and something that you can follow. And I came across some great stuff. You know, I mean, I think, you know, I'm a fan of Tony Robbins. Not everyone is, you know. There's some other stuff out there as well that I really admire. Some of the Jack Canfield stuff, some of the Chopra stuff. There's some good stuff out there. But for me, there wasn't something that resonated at all levels with me. So someone just said to me, well, why don't you write it? And I thought, well, that's a damn good idea. Why don't I write it? So, and that's what I did, really. And there's a lot of me in it. There's a lot of personal stories, there's sort of anecdotal stuff, as you know, because I know you've read the book. I was struggling for a title. I really was struggling for a title. And I remember that, you know, one of the things that I'm a sports psychologist, is my first degree. one of the things that you remember when you're coaching, particularly athletes, is particularly sprinters, you just tell them, relax, don't try too hard. You know, that's one of the key things, relax. So focus on the moment, but it's about detached engagement. You know, visualize the race and then focus on it and give it 100%. But don't consciously try too hard. And I was just consciously trying too hard. And a lot of my wife's family live in India, and she was going with the kids, and I thought, well, I'll get some more writing done. I wasn't far from finishing the book. But I just couldn't get a title. She said, come with me for a couple. So I went with her for a couple of weeks. And, you know, India's just one of those places. It's just, you know, there's something about it, you know. We've had this conversation about the vibe that you pick up there.
Absolutely.
So I just thought, well, relax. The title will just come to me. I'm just going to forget about the book. I'm sure it will just come to me in an instant. And, you know, at the beginning of the second week, I'm sitting on the bed thinking, oh, I'm having a really good time. And suddenly, out of nowhere, I thought of the book. And within 2 seconds, this thought just went mindset and match in my head. And it's really simple as that. It just came into my head out of the ether. I know not from where. But there it was. And I knew there and then. I told my wife. I shared it with a few other people. That's a great title. Great title. How did you come up with that? And I said, well, I don't really know. It just sort of popped up, really. And many, many people have commented on the title and say that it, you know, it really, really resonates with them. I say resonate or not, it's my favourite word in the English language. But yeah, so that's how that came about.
Great. Now, I guess this whole process of letting go of our conditioned self and moving more towards our true, authentic self is quite a remarkable process. But I was just wondering, like, you've hired over 50,000 people for different jobs through your corporate career. And I was just wondering if you could actually share what it is that you think that holds most people back from actually chasing their dreams.
I think, you know, I mean, first things first, one obviously needs to take responsibility. And you've touched about conditioning, you know. If given the point in time, I mean, the truth is that, you know, our life is our responsibility. And now where we are today is because of the choices we made yesterday. And the only person that's going to change your life is the one you see in the mirror. So take responsibility is very, very empowering. Now, a lot of people do that, and they'll acknowledge that, and they'll say that. But the next step is to take the right action. And as human beings, we're quite unique in the animal kingdom. I don't know if any of the listeners on the call have done biology, but, you know, if you get an amoeba, which is one of the most simple single-celled organisms on the planet, and if you prod it, it will move in the opposite direction. But as humans, if we take action and we get a certain result which we don't want, and we want a different result, for some inexplicable reason, we keep on doing the same thing and expect to get a different result. So we have to do something different. But we can only do that if we let go of our conditioning. And I think a lot of people, you know, as a psychotherapist, you know, I've dealt with people, particularly some women, you know, who've been battered, abused, you know, I mean, you get the picture, you know, in quite a bad way. And they've managed to turn their life around. I mean, you have to forgive your past. We were born free. You know, when we were babies, life was easy. You know, if you wanted something, you cried. And if you're happy, you laughed. But along the way, the baggage of conditioning has weighed us down. And I think it's a whole process of unlearning and getting to the heart of who you are and what your purpose is. You know, that's not necessarily something that happens overnight, but by actually becoming aware of it in the first place, that conditioning will start to melt.
Absolutely. Now, with this, I guess in lots of the success literature, there's a massive exploration of the process of setting goals and the importance of setting goals. And I was just wondering, how important do you think goal setting is in terms of actually creating the life that you want?
You know, the number of times I've had sat on goal setting sessions in corporate life and fallen off my chair or started snoring, it's incredible. Goal setting is very, very important. Now, but get a little something right. All of you people are like, forget smart goals, you know. Yes, there's some sense in smart goals, you know. But at the end of the day, your goals should be things that inspire you. They should have a wow factor. They should motivate you to achieve them. They should be dreams with deadlines. And, you know, I'll use the word probably a lot in the second half of this call about energy. I recently was on we call it in the trade a multi-level platform, so there are other speakers and not just me. And I was shocked and quite taken aback by the number of people that speakers talked about. Time is the most important thing, how you manage your time, what you do with your time. Yes, that's important. You get 86,400 seconds in a day, and that is important. But the fundamental unit of performance is not time. It is energy. It is the energy that you bring to each moment. And the only way that you will start, one of the ways you'll start to do that is having goals that inspire you. You know, just setting goals because it's nice to have, you've got to take a step back and work out your why. Once you've got your why you're doing things right, and it's not a should or a could, it's a I want to do this, you know, I want to do this, then the energy appears and the hows will start to look after themselves. You know, I'm a bit of a clothes horse. I like my clothes, and one of my favourite designers is Paul Smith, or Sir Paul Smith as he is. You know, and one of the things he said is that, you know, it's not about working longer hours or harder, or working harder or shorter hours. It's about what you do with each moment and the energy you bring to each moment. So goals are very, very important because they focus our energy. They channel our energy. They help to do that, give us a structure with which to do that. Because we can do something, but we can't do everything, as the saying goes. They're very, very valuable, but think about, you know, why you're setting them, you know, and the motivation behind them in the first place. And, you know, it should be something that when you achieve them, you celebrate them. You crack open a bottle of champagne or whatever your poison is. You know, but I've come across people who've in corporate life who've come to me and, I've achieved my goal. I was thinking, well, God, you know, you achieved your goal. I didn't feel very inspired by it. And that's it, you know. So we're only on the planet once, some people might beg to differ. But, you know, one of the ways is set big goals. You know, you can't rise to low expectations. Set big, hairy, audacious goals.
Excellent. I just love the whole notion of dreams with deadlines. That's great. Now, as I mentioned, Sunil, we've had questions come in from all around the world, and I just thought I might ask you some of those now.
Sure.
And I'm just going to kick off with a question from Julia in the United Kingdom. And Julia asks, "Hi, I've done lots of personal coaching and understand the issues, but yet still I can't seem to get myself to take the right action. I keep struggling to find that one thing I'm really passionate about that fulfills my life purpose, which I still haven't identified. Any ideas on how I can figure out the why to motivate me? Thank you."
Yeah, the first thing I would say to Julia, the answer's there. You know, there's absolutely no doubt about that. The fact that you haven't got clarity at the moment, you know, that's fine. It's clouded, but you know, there are ways and means and things that you can do to increase the level of clarity. I mean, some of the things are ideal, and obviously it's beyond the scope of this call to go into colossal amount of detail, but you know, ask yourself some questions. I think the questions that we ask of ourselves and also the questions we don't ask of ourselves shape our destiny. So ask yourself, if money was no object and you knew you couldn't sell, what would you do? Now, if you were given eternal life and had as much money as you wanted, what would you do? I mean, who do you most admire and why? And you know, the answers to these sort of questions will help you clarify both your values and your vision. Another very, very powerful exercise that I do, and I've used this at the most senior level, at board level, and I've used this with people who are in their 50s and have left the company as multi-billionaires but still haven't found their passion, Julia, but they do. And a very powerful technique is what the Americans call storytelling. So what you do is essentially sit down with someone and just run through your life story and recount all the times where you have been truly, truly inspired and ecstatically happy, absolutely ecstatically happy. And then ask you to write down why you've been ecstatically happy. Now, some of these things might be obvious, you know, birth of a child, a marriage, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But no matter how stupid it might seem, don't worry about it. I mean, I've got this thing when I did this exercise for me, was scoring a goal and making this amazing catch when I was playing cricket. When you write all these down, and you can write down 15, 20, 25, the more the better, you will find that there's a bit of a common thread run through them. And it's in that story lies your purpose. And for me, and when I did this exercise, you know, I realized that, you know, speaking is the thing I do, you know, in front of people, and that's something I'm very, very good at and something that inspires me. But the thing about the balls was when I scored the goal and when I made the amazing catch, and there have been other such weird and quite strange instances that I seem to remember, and I'm especially happy, it was because I was at one with everyone and everything around me. I was working at the subconscious level. And again, I come back to my sports coaching days. The greatest performances are always produced when one performs at the subconscious level. You know, it's a process of detached engagement when you let go. So you do what you need to do, but you let go and you detach yourself from the outcome. I mean, I'm a big tennis fan, and I don't know if anyone remembers or they're old enough as me when Goran Ivanisevic won his one and only Wimbledon title. Well, I think it's four double faults he served. And he was asked, well, what changed it the fifth time? And he said, well, what happened was that when I lifted my racket up on the fourth double fault, it felt like it weighed about 40 kilograms because I was so scared because I knew I was serving for the biggest thing in my life. You know, one, I was one serve away from winning my dream as a child of Wimbledon. And he said, the fifth time, I just managed to somehow forget what I was doing. And I just concentrated on hitting the ball the way I used to hit it when I was a kid, you know, and it went straight down the centre line and Pat Rafter couldn't return it. It was paid at the unconscious level. John McEnroe was asked when he hit an amazing backhand winner against Jimmy Connors to win his first win one of his Wimbledon titles. What was going through your head when you hit that amazing backhand? And when you ask sports people, the answer is always the same. It's nothing. Because if you're thinking, you can't produce peak performance. You need to be completely, as Chip Mentihaly, the great psychologist, says, is be in flow. Or sportsmen say, be in the zone. And it's when you're in the zone and when you're in flow with the universe, I'm going to start getting a bit esoteric out there. You know, when you're in flow with the universe and everything and everyone around you, things start to happen. Synchronicity appears. You know, and the results, suddenly the hows start to appear. You think, well, that's a strange way I achieved the result, but I didn't realise it was going to happen that way. You know, you focus on your why, and I said before, it's so important that the hows just show up.
Absolutely. It just definitely reminded me of all the brilliant sporting anecdotes actually throughout the book. All very powerful illustrations of just really enjoying yourself and being present in the moment.
The book is a blend of, you know, my background is as a sports psychologist and a sports scientist, but so it's a blend of, my wife's a medic, and I'm great into understanding that sort of mind-body interface. And I'm fortunate that I have access to, you know, some fantastic neurologists, cardiologists, gastroenterologists, you know, who will have a good level of awareness. And we have these debates, and you know, I think you've alluded to this on a number of occasions since I've known you, Jane. And this East meets West, you know, neither one is necessarily right, but we can learn an awful amount off each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great. Now, this question actually comes from Thando. Hopefully, I've pronounced that right, in South Africa. And okay. Thando asks, how do you access your inner being to propel yourself higher?
Okay, yeah, that's an interesting. For me, it's about listening to you. Initially, it's what I call practice bottom up thinking. In corporate world, particularly, you know, everyone, you think rationally, logically. You know, if you look at animals in the wild, they rely a great deal, as far as research can tell, you know, on their gut instinct, you know, animal instinct, as we call it. And I think you need to start by what the Quakers call the listen to that small, still voice within, your intuition. And once you start listening to intuition, tapping into that, so you listen to your stomach, your gut, and then, you know, you listen to your head as well. You know, we live in the real world. You know, there's nothing wrong with having some rationality around it. The problem is, if you start with your head, you know, unless you're an incredibly self-aware individual, an avatar, you know, what happens is that your conditioning and or your ego get in the way. Mm. It's very difficult to tap into your inner being if your conditioning or your ego get in the way, you know. Or if you're starting to get there, typically what happens is people, you know, get this sort of mind chatter, you know, they get the monkey on the shoulder. The way to, I know someone else has asked a question here, so I'm going a bit off piece, but someone asked a question about how do you stop this negative talk and this negative chatter? Well, the way is to starve the monkey. You know, you can't think two thoughts at the same time. If you take focused, what I call authentic action, you know, doing who you are in line with your purpose and your values, you starve the negative thoughts, because the only way these negative thoughts flourish is if you pay them attention. If you don't pay them attention, they cease to exist. So, you know, I mean, I use some simple techniques. I mean, negative thoughts happen, you know, the proverbial happens, you know, but I quite often listen to music, you know, it helps me break my state, as the NLP people will know, you know, or I play electric guitar, or I go and play some sport, or I'll play with my kids. There are certain things that I do, and it might sound almost clinical, and it is, in fact. I've got to that stage now where, you know, if I've got that negative mindset, I'll catch myself, you know, and I'll do one of a handful of things. Or I'll read a bit of a book, or I'll, you know, get a quote or something. And there's a psychotherapist called, it's a reframe, which NLP has nicked to that term. But and that works incredibly well. So I hope that sort of answers that question in terms of tapping into inner being. Because getting out of the way of your conditioning and ego is the first step, and you do that by tapping into your intuition. We have we have our own satellite navigation system. And that is our intuition, our internal guidance system. But over the years, you know, when we're kids, we listen to it a little bit more. But over the years, the people that help us run our brain, our parents and our peer group, successfully managed to knock it out of us. You know, I think we've talked about this before. It's an amazing thing, you know. The brain is one of the greatest pieces of software, the greatest software that's ever been invented. You know, you buy a TV or you buy... you know, even a toaster or whatever, you'll get a manual on how to use it. When you get your brain, who teaches you how to use your brain?
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's a great answer.
Yeah.
Now, this question actually continues on the theme from the whole East meets West, and it comes from Daniel in the United States. And Daniel asks, how do you move from being outwardly successful to being inwardly fulfilled?
I mean, forgive me, Daniel, but there might be, if I understand the way you phrase that, the two aren't mutually exclusive. I mean, I think you can be outwardly successful and inwardly successful and fulfilled as well, as I've touched upon before. I think the thing to do there is you have to live your internal truth, not anyone else's. The people that I've come across in corporate life, you know, they've got the money, but, you know, some of them who aren't fulfilled. And the reason is that one of the things that drives many people is that they fear rejection, you know. But if you ask yourself the question, well, who are the people rejecting you? Because if they are our friends and family and true friends, you know, they will want to support us whether we fail or succeed. You know, so our point of reference is those people that really care about us, give us honest feedback, and our point of reference should be ourselves. So, you know, there's no real reason why we should fear rejection. And the other thing is the fear of failure. I mean, I come across that a lot. A lot of people self-sabotage when they're on the right path and manage to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Now, if you don't try to do something, you don't try to live your dreams and realise your dreams, you can always join the biggest club in the world, which is the If Only Club. You know, if only I'd done this, if only I'd done that, and you can go to Someday I'll. You know, someday I'll do this, someday I'll do that, someday I'll do that, which is the most visited place in the universe. So, you know, if you focus, if you do the things that you fear and you take one step at a time in line with expressing who you really are, you know, what's the smallest thing you can do from where you are with what you've got to live your dreams? So I'm not talking about massive steps. Now, I'm not talking about huge changes. You know, if I often talk about, you know, there's a magic figure and it's 212. And it'd be interesting if people know what that means. 212 degrees Fahrenheit is the boiling point of water. At 211 degrees, you know, there might be a little bit of steam, but nothing really happens. 212, 1 degree extra, you know, less than 0.5%, all of a sudden you can power 500-ton locomotives. Mm. So it's doing the things a little bit differently, doing things in line with who you really are, living your DNA, as I call it, you know, and you will and you will start to be fulfilled because you're living your internal truth.
Mm. Great. I love the whole notion of just work out what's the smallest thing you can do. Often we become so overwhelmed with our dreams and aspirations that it prevents us from actually moving forward. But being really connected to those little steps that you take along the way can be incredibly helpful.
Yeah. And also, you know, I think some of the, you know, everyone knows about the secret and the law of attraction, and you know, and I buy into that, you know. But one of the things that you do need to do is take action, but it doesn't have to be huge, massive, colossal action to begin with, because you need to overcome the inertia, just one small step at a time. And what that does is that builds your self-confidence. The self-confidence builds self-esteem, and so the two work off each other. And then what happens is when obstacles come your way, because you've got that level of confidence, suddenly you can overcome them, because they will, you know, they inevitably will, but you can overcome them.
Mm.
So just do who you are, and even everyone can find half an hour here or an hour there, you know, to do something, or follow their passion, whatever that might be, whatever weird and wonderful that be, if it's setting up a bonsai tree business, you know, or it's migrating from becoming a, you know, an admin assistant to a marketing, or whatever it is, you know, and only you as an individual know that what it is. But you must follow your dreams. As I said earlier, it's selfish not to. It's absolutely selfish not to. The world needs people who have come alive.
Excellent. That's a great question. Answer. Now, this question comes from Petra in Belgium. And Petra asks, I can concentrate. I have been really successful with my job at Exxon Mobil and Accenture internationally, but still I remark that when it comes to implementing my own ideas, I somehow always give priority to others. It seems to me I don't set clear boundaries with others, since I many times say yes to a request for help to keep the peace. I started working on this recently, but would also welcome tips and advice from you.
Well, I mean, that's a very interesting statement that Petra has said there. You know, and I think the great thing is, you know, obviously Petra's heart's in the right place, because it seems to me that, you know, she goes out to have a way to help other people. But I said earlier, talking about being selfish, and I'm going to continue on this theme now. You need to be selfish to give more of yourself, if that makes sense, because you're more energized and more fulfilled. You need to learn to say no sometimes. You know, it's absolutely crucial. And part of the reason being, you know, particularly if you're dealing in corporate world, and sometimes people aren't as self-aware as yourself, and might, you know, unconsciously take advantage or try and do things you don't want to do. There's a great phrase by the American, Dr. Philip McGraw, I think it is, and he says, we teach people how to treat us. And then NLP says, you know, the meaning of communication is the response you get. So if you're not getting the answers you want or the reactions you want, you need to look at what you're saying and the way you're saying it. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, being rude or distant or cutting things off, but it's looking at, again, I come back to energy. What is the energy that flows between you and other people? Yeah, and if there are people that drain your energy, what I call psychic vampires or dream stealers, you know, who aren't supportive of you, then, and if it's family sometimes, and I have a couple of those in my family, You know, they're difficult. You can't just, you know, I'm never going to speak to you again. It doesn't work like that, but you sort of can't compartmentalize it and you rationalize it and you deal with it. But other people, you know, the toxic people, I don't do toxic people, you know, because they just drain your energy. And you just need to, you need to walk away from it and try and deal with it as best you can. Actually say to people, look, this is the situation. What you're saying and doing is making me feel this way. And if they can't see it, then you need to get away from that relationship. That sounds harsh, but you do need to do that.
That's great advice. Now, this one comes from Hari in India. And Hari asks, how does one achieve a complete freedom? Today, we are surrounded by various priorities like family, kids, subordinates, friends, relatives, and so on. And they do possess your mind, body, and spirit against your own goal. How can one achieve complete freedom from this state of life?
Well, I suppose, Harry, I mean, I think it's about, life's about balance. You know, at the end of the day, if you've got all the money in the world but nobody loves you, you're going to be unhappy, you know, and vice versa. You know, so things like, you know, we know this. Whether it's health, money, spirituality, a sense of community, a sense of belonging, a sense of purpose, learning, growing, being such, all of these things are incredibly important, and you need to access all of them and have that balance. So, you know, I don't think you want to be completely free from status. I think, you know, that there's an assumption there that, you know, having the trappings of success, be they financial, one can't have them because one needs to be, you know, a spiritual being. As I said earlier, you can have your cake and eat it all. You know, it's if you realise the money, it's what you do with it. Now you get to give away a lot more in terms of possessing your mind. Then I think that's a process of uncluttering the mind, surely. Now, and whether that's meditation and ways to increase levels of self-awareness, then that's what one needs to do. But I come back to energy again. Once you are doing what you love to do and you are being authentic, your energy levels will go through the roof, and suddenly you'll start forgetting about, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm not happy with this, I'm not happy with that. Things start to fall into place. I think it was Goethe said, isn't it, the quote about, you know, boldness of genius and magic in it. When you start doing what you love to do, things fall into place.
Yeah, that Goethe quote's definitely one of my favourite quotes.
Yeah.
Always when I...
Probably
when quoted I feel...
in there, but, you know, I'm sure someone out there knows what the actual quote is.
Yeah. Great. Now, we've got time for one more question, Sunil, and I'm actually going to sneak in quite a fun question, actually, from William in the United States. And William asks,
okay, fun question, good.
Sunil, who cuts your hair?
Are you serious? Who cuts your hair? That's interesting. It's just taking me a bit aback. Who cuts my hair? A very lovely lady cuts my hair. Now, I have my hair like that, and it's, I know, on the front of my book, I wanted to be quite spiky. The honest answer is I've hardly ever combed my hair in the last, roughly 7 or 8 years, I would have thought. And it's easy, it's lovely for me. But on a serious note, you know, and again, it's beyond the scope of this call, and there's a lot more in my book. There's something about personal branding. Which, you know, I'm quite, you'd probably go on this call, I'm not a shy, retiring type. You know, I dress loud, I live hard, I play hard. And that's me, you know, but it gets me noticed. Not because I'm trying to get noticed by being something I'm not, but I'm just being me, you know. And people warm to people who are doing, you know, we crave authenticity. You know, if we look at when we hate politicians, you know, a lot of us hate politicians, particularly in the UK. And you look at who are the most popular politicians. They're the likes of Vince Cable, you know, Boris Johnson, Ken Livingstone. You know, now, I'm not talking about the political stance here, because I've spoken about three people across the political divide. But those people who are people who wear their heart on the sleeve, whether you agree with their opinions or not, they come across as authentic people.
Mm.
And we crave authenticity. And in an economy of excess supply for those people that run their own businesses, you're all competing for a slice of attention. And how do you get that attention? You know, it is by appealing to people's hearts, not their heads. Now, you need to attract the emotional consumer, not the rational one. All things being equal, you know, it's the emotional customer. So your colleagues, your friends, you need to understand what makes them mad, sad and glad, as my MBA professor, Kate DeRees, used to say. You know, if you find out what makes them mad, sad and glad, and also ask yourself what makes you mad, sad and glad, and live your own truth, you're a long way down the right path to being successful, whether you're in corporate life or running your own small business.
Mm. I love that quote. We all crave our authenticity.
We do.
I think that's absolutely the truth, yeah. Great. But, well, thank you, William. That was a good question as well.
Yeah, well, I wasn't sure what an answer to that one. Yeah.
Great.
And it is my own hair. Someone's asked me that before. It's my own hair. It's not a wig.
Brilliant. Well, Sunil, we're coming to the end of our hour, and I have to say, like, I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation this evening, as I always do when we get together and have a chat. But
yeah.
I'm sure people on the call will have really resonated with your message this evening as well. And I was just wondering if you could actually share with people listening in at home how they can actually find out more about your work, and also how they can actually get their hands on your latest book, Mindset and Match.
Yeah, I mean, I have a website, www.sunilbarley.com. Go on the website and you can buy the book from there. You know, my contact details are on there. You want to give me a call? Give me a call on my mobile. I'm a busy man, so I'm not, I'd say to people, although I said contact my mobile, I'm probably not going to get back to you straight away, and you probably won't get through, but I will come back to you. I absolutely will come back to you. So, you know, I love talking. I love connecting with people. Have a look at my website. It tells a bit more about me and what I do. I do some coaching as well. I must confess I don't do a huge amount of coaching, but I have a few clients that I work with on an ongoing basis. And let me explain that a bit further. I work with people who genuinely want to change. Now, you might think, well, everybody wants to change, but quite often when you stress test them, you know, the motivation is lacking. And so, yes, you know, I can go through it and we can change that, but I find it more rewarding with people who are just have a slightly increased level of self-awareness, and I'll work with them. I'll do some coaching. I used to do some seminars, but my speaking business, I'm so busy that that's fallen by the wayside. So if anybody has got an audience they want me to speak to, give me a call. I said you can buy the book from the website, and give me a call. Drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. And I was just wondering, Sam, what are your favourite audiences to speak in front of?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I don't really have a favourite. You know, I spoke to a young crowd today, you know, a youth group, and they really, really keep me on my toes. And it's fantastic, you know, that sense of optimism at that age. They don't carry so much of the baggage and the conditioning. I find the corporate audience, which I tend to do quite a lot of, I find that rewarding in the sense it's challenging. You know, how can I talk about spirituality without mentioning the word? Well, that's always a good challenge. I tend to talk about the hidden hand, and so, you know, you'd be surprised if you just trust, you know, hidden hand and trust something out there, you know, and just, you know, do what you need to do and take the right action, that things tend to happen, this great universe of ours. On the odd occasion, I will talk about spirituality, but that's rewarding from those sort of perspectives. And then obviously, you know, the mind, body, spirit market, you know, it's much easier to talk to that audience because, you know, what I say, I can talk openly about spirituality and East meets West, and, you know, some of the concepts about synchronicity resonate a lot more easily.
Mm.
And that's a way that you can tend to get a deeper connection there.
Mm.
So they're the sort of, you know, so all audiences really is the answer. I've not really answered your question there, but, you know, in terms of it's... each one engages in a different way.
Mm. Awesome. And also, just a personal question, Sunil. I was just wondering, with your book writing journey, how was that as a process for you, and was it a book that just wrote itself, or was it something that that birthed over a number of years?
Yeah, I mean, I'd actually, during my corporate days, I've always written, and I've written for, you know, I had an in-house magazine when I was at Vodafone that I started that talent, and I used to end up writing most of it because that's something I wanted to do. So I've always written ever since I was doing, you know, from my college days. But the process of writing a book, as you know, Damon, because I mean, you're writing your book, and I think it's getting the structure right, you know, spending some time on the structure, but then it's got to flow, it's got to come from the heart. It really has got to come from the heart. So I initially made the mistake of trying to write for an audience. Now, whether that was a corporate audience or whether that was the sort of mind, body, spirit, wellness audience, and I had a couple of, you know, ideas and chapters, and in the end, someone gave me some very good advice. He's an academic and has written several books. And the penny just dropped. I said, well, I need to write from the heart. And I hope that's what comes across, because it's not written for any audience. It's something that everything in there is what I believe, it's what I've lived, it's what I've experienced. So, I mean, I like to think I walk my talk. So it's great. And I'd say to anyone who wants to write a book, just go ahead and do it. Just go ahead and do it. What inspiration grabs you, just go and do it. Absolutely. Everyone's got a book in them, and this cliche goes, but it is definitely true.
Awesome. That's great advice. And I was just wondering, in closing, Sunil, did you have any parting words for people sitting at home thinking about whether they have what it takes to develop a success mindset?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has what it takes to develop a success mindset. And, you know, our time is limited. So I'd just like to leave you with some concluding thoughts. And now we're coming to the turn of the year. 2010 is upon us. You know, and there is absolutely no reason why you can't have your best and most successful year yet. So four things I'd ask you to do in 2010, and they are to drink, swear, steal, and lie. So drink from the fountain of knowledge. Leaders are readers. Swear to make every day the best of your life, because you never know when it might be your last. Please steal a little time every day to do something for someone else, without expecting to receive any credit. We know givers win, takers lose. And finally, when you lie down in your bed tonight, thank your God that you've got dreams and that you can be the unbelievable success that I know you can be.
Wow. They're fine, fine parting words. Well, Sunil, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. And
I really enjoyed it. I hope the listeners have enjoyed it. So feel free to contact me at any time. It's been awesome spending time with you as always, Damien. I'm not doing it face to face, I must confess. Over a lovely Lebanese lunch, I think was the last time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was lovely.
Do that again.
Great, and also thank you so much to everyone at home. We had some phenomenal questions come in.
Darling, whoever's dialing, I really do hope you've got something out of this that you can use, because I mean, that's what I really want to do. You know, whether you like me or you don't like me, and whatever you take of me as a person, I have no problem, because that wasn't the purpose of this. Whether you like me, I hope you've taken stuff that you can use. That's the most important thing that will make a change.
Awesome. Now, for those of you who would love to listen to this teleseminar again, we will actually be making this recording available for free on the peopleyoushouldmeet.com website on the recordings tab first thing tomorrow morning. Now, also, I invite you all, if you feel this message could actually change the life of a friend, a family member, or a loved one, by all means, take that step forward and actually share the recording. It's amazing just these little steps that we take on this human journey to really inspire other people, the actual joy that those little steps actually bring you. So I do encourage everyone to do that if you feel so moved. Great. So, yeah, thanks once again, everyone at home, and thank you once again, Sunil. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks, and everyone who dialed in. Appreciate that.
Okay. Take care.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.